The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where we kind of focus on answering your questions that have been sent in via email and phone calls and Telegram and all other sources of communication. We do take live calls on this version of our show, so if you happen to be listening on Monday afternoon, approximately 3 o'clock Mountain Time, our phone lines are open for any calls. Phone number would be 970-530-0556. Feel free to call in. Laura will field your call. Let us know that you're on the line, and we'll put you to the head of the list, the front of the line, if you will, while we're answering a big old pile of email questions that we've been getting over the past few weeks. We've been, treading water. I think we're answering them about as fast as they come in. It'd be nice if we got a little ahead, but we'll kind of see how it goes here. I know we've gotten quite a few Social Security questions in. We seem to get, there's a lot of questions on Social Security. Seems pretty confusing to people once they start getting close enough to Social Security. As they're working and contributing to Social Security, it's kind of the last thing on their mind. But when they actually realize there's some decisions to be made, when to claim, how much, when to coordinate benefits with a spouse, all the different types of benefits that can be claimed, the benefits for delaying, those sorts of things, things get a little confusing. So as we always say, you want to have your ducks in a row. You want to have things figured out before you claim, because once you claim, it's very difficult to undo any mistakes you've made, or if you change your mind, have some regrets over what you did. So make sure you get your ducks in a row before you claim by either reaching out to us, getting a Social Security optimization report done, or any other resources you deem to be reliable. On a side note, before we answer our first question, Social Security this month has finally released their anticipated cost of living adjustment or increase for 2019. These will be reflected in the January benefit payments, which are technically December benefits being paid in January. 2.8%, so pretty hefty.
That was actually a question we just got. So keep talking.
Oh, so... So there you go. there's been a fair amount of wage inflation as well, and I didn't expect this to be a Social Security show, so I didn't print that out. There's actually a release that I'll be going over on the Social Security blog that all the press, of course, latches on to this 2.8% COLA adjustment, but there's actually a lot of things that change every single year. The earnings test limits, the maximum wages that are subject to Social Security taxation, all kinds of things actually change along with inflation. So I go over some of those more detailed things. The I just know the earnings test, which is in 2018, $17,040, so 17040 is the earnings limit for 2018. In 2019, it goes up $600 a year, so about $50 a month. So 17640 instead of 17040. So that's just one off the top of my head I remember. I don't have the rest of them memorized. But the cap, the wage base limit, has gone up substantially as well. So more of your earnings are going to be subject to Social Security taxes, but that also increases the maximum benefit you can generate with those Social Security withholdings that are going to be taken from you during your working years. So all the press, 2.8%, so that's the most substantial increase in about a decade for Social Security benefits. And that applies to retirement benefits, spousal benefits, survivor benefits, disability benefits. So all the big well-known benefit groups all get affected by that 2.8% increase. So we knocked out one of the questions via my intro.
Yes, that was one of our questions. I don't have it here in front of me, but I remember reading it. But it was somewhere, and they wanted to know, are we getting a Social Security cost of living increase? So you just answered that, so that was very good.
Everyone is. 2.8%. Pretty large one, actually.
Pretty good. Okay, well, my name is Jim Solnier. I am a certified financial planner, and that previous voice you heard, who goes on and on and on and on, we know, but we kind of let him go on and on and on.
I admit this time I did.
That is Chris Stein. He is a finance instructor at Colorado State University. He's actually the director of the financial planning program at Colorado State University, and he is also a certified financial planner. This is the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A, where we answer your Qs with a bunch of RAs. And we have a lot of Qs, so I want to kind of jump into them, but I want to encourage our listeners, if you too have a Q, you can queue up in our QQ.
Wow.
Ah, isn't that pretty cute? Huh?
Did you rehearse that?
But you can send us your own Qs by going to the website, Jim Helps, that's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and we'll be glad to answer your question. Or you can just send us the email direct if you send it to jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. jim@jimhelps.com. We will get your email. I will promptly read it. I put a little flag on it with the email flag thingamajiggy. And then I drag it into another folder in my email that says emails. And then I print it. And then it comes right up here on my desk where it gets lost with all these other emails. And that's kind of how we run things here. Very organized.
Sounds like a lot of steps. Just to
I can't think of an easier way. Can you?
Just have them in the folder and just start checking them off as we go through.
What folder?
In your email box.
That's what. Oh, electronically do it.
Yeah. Just pull it up on your fancy little iPad there. No?
I could. I like holding paper, okay, though. But the problem is, how do I have the messy side of the desk?
It's a good question. We need to clean up in here a little bit, actually.
It is. Well, yeah, especially my side. I can't even see the desk, but I think there's a desk under this pile of papers. So
of all the
pretty
questions.
Soon there's just going to be a pile of papers, and you're only going to be able to look across the table and see my
eyes.
And then someday those will go as well, and you'll just see my hand up here trying to reach for the next letter. But we do have emails. We generally don't lose them. We occasionally misplace them. But we will try to always get to them. And that's probably a too long of an email to start with, huh? That's,
unless you can summarize that one. That's a little long.
That's going to take me a little bit of time to summarize that. Okay, where are the list of questions that I wanted to... Okay, I think this was it. Okay, we'll start with a non-Social Security question.
Perfect.
All right. If I buy a SPIA or DIA with my IRA... Maybe we should let people know what all this means. If I buy a single premium immediate annuity or a deferred income annuity with my individual retirement arrangement, I thought I was going to say account, didn't you?
I had confidence in you that you'd say it correctly.
Longtime listeners know IRA actually stands for Individual Retirement Arrangement. We used to nail everyone on the radio show. Remember when we did that?
We did the trivia questions.
Yeah, did the trivia questions.
What does IRA stand for?
To give away a pie. Yeah. Everyone would call up individual retirement account. Individual retirement annuity. Yeah. Nope, individual retirement arrangement. But everyone calls them individual retirement accounts. But if I buy a SPIA or DIA with my IRA and turn the income on before I reach 59 and a half, I was told I will not be subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Mm. Is this true? And then, of course, he signs his name. Well, actually, he put his initials. You don't have to play. He did his initials.
Okay.
But even if he had his name here, we would call him George, as we always do. We'll play the little George soundbite in a minute. Chris was ready to hit it. But he didn't put his real name. Everyone else gave us their real name. Okay. There's a bunch. I mean, God, I could spend the whole show on just this question, but I won't.
Okay.
I'm going to answer this in 10 words or less.
Well, really? I'm going to count. Go ahead.
Yes.
That's it?
Well.
No clarification? That's the
as much as I want to clarify, the short answer, three letters, is yes. It's true.
True.
But there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yeah.
So let's explain to listeners what this listener... No, yeah. Let's explain to listeners what this listener is really asking. So he's contemplating turning his IRA into almost what we call a personal pension. He wants to take some of the money in his IRA and buy an income stream that he cannot outlive. More and more people are starting to realize the benefits of that, especially as they remember what we always say, Chris, on this show. We may be talking to the 40, 50, 60-year-old you, but we are advocating for the 70, 80, and 90-year-old you. And the older you is not going to understand financial concepts like the younger you can. We talk openly, Chris, on the studies done out of Harvard and Texas Tech University. Harvard needs no introduction, but Texas Tech, and I'm sure you will agree, Chris, is one of the leaders in educating the new generation of financial planners.
Absolutely. Has been for quite some time.
Right. Their faculty, their staff, their students, the course structure that they study under is all well known in the industry. And they did studies on this phenomenon as well. And they concur with Harvard that as the human brain ages, its ability to understand financial concepts degrades. So we feel personally, we know that's coming. If you are around elderly people, if you've watched your parents age, I see my parents. Now, my mom is still pretty good about things, but my dad, my parents are divorced. My dad, he doesn't get financial concepts anymore, folks. He's 85 years old. He doesn't get it. I deal with this all the time when I chat with him. This is very typical, though, is it not, Chris?
To kind of have a decline.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where, abnormal not to, I'd say.
Where does a SPIA or a DIA or an income stream you can't outlive fit into this picture? Well, simply put, as you grow old and you may not understand asset allocation, rebalancing, portfolio allocation, buys, sells, ETFs, mutual funds, as you start to lose track of large cap, small cap, mid cap, growth, all these things you follow right now as do-it-yourselfers who understand finance and investing, you won't as you get older. So having a steady stream of income that simply gets deposited into your bank account is very appealing to some people.
Mm-hmm.
So this gentleman is asking if he were to do that, and he's younger than 59 and a half, is he going to have to pay the 10% early withdrawal penalty? I have a few questions. If he had sent more information, why would someone so young want to buy a guaranteed income stream now? I would be kind of against that for young folk, because your income stream, unlike other types of guaranteed lifetime streams of income you may get in retirement, such as Social Security and pension, to other guaranteed or secure income streams Chris and I like a lot, income annuities are based off of your age and current interest rates. Mm-hmm. Now, pension payments are also based off your age and current interest rates, but they also include in the calculation, which is the lion's share of the calculation, your salary, your earnings, your historical earnings for that firm. So you may be young and still pull a pretty damn good pension mm-hmm. if you're a high earner. And Social Security, they don't look at interest rates at all in the determination of their income benefit. It's all based on your historical salary over 35 years. But an annuity, a SPIA or a DIA, and I'll talk in a minute about the difference between the two, those will look specifically at your age and current interest rates. If he's younger than 59 and a half, Chris, that's pretty damn young to be buying an
income
stream.
Well, he's got two things going on that's working against him in making this decision now. And we're kind of surmising things. We don't know his whole financial situation, but it is a little bit odd for someone that young, especially in an environment of relatively low interest rates. While we're not quite at historic lows anymore, because interest rates have been kind of sneaking upwards, we're still darn low. We're really close to historic low interest rates, which is a bad time generally to enter into one of these annuity contracts, unless you need to at the time, because you're doing it at a time of low interest rates, which generates a lower payment calculation compared to the amount you're contributing into it, the single premium portion of it, of the SPIA. So he's got two things working against him. He's young, which reduces the amount you get because the insurance company has to assume you're going to be collecting it for a long period of time since you are young. And you're doing it at a time when interest rates are low. So the relative payout compared to what you're going to have to contribute is not particularly attractive. No. So there better be some other overriding reason to do it now versus later. And he doesn't divulge that. But as advice, general advice to this author, we want you to make sure there's a justifiable reason for doing this now.
Absolutely.
Which I will say, this advice would, some people, you know, we talk about annuities relatively more than many financial planners do. And I think some people, especially if they only listen to our podcast a little bit here and there, come to the conclusion that, you know, we're big pushers of annuities. Annuities are just a solution for a particular retirement planning problem. If they're appropriate for the situation, then we talk about them. If they're not appropriate, then we don't talk about them, or we discourage someone from doing it. So while many people can benefit from some amount of annuity income, it isn't right for everyone, nor is it the only way you can accomplish what you're trying to do. So I want to put that out there. So if we were annuity
hacks
is the is the slang term, we wouldn't have any issue with this person being in his
50s. Oh, if we were annuity
hacks. And saying, oh, yeah, you definitely do
we
this.
We would be saying, well,
take your entire IRA and come see me, and I've got an annuity for you.
Yeah, but that's exactly where I was going. We would be saying to him right now, call us today.
Because we have even better annuities than what you're talking about.
We have a bonus you can get into and all this other crap that they use. But I want to get back to the nuances of a very short email, but you know me when I get into this. So the short answer, folks, is when you annuitize, and in this case, he's annuitizing inside an IRA, an annuitization or annuitize, when I say when you annuitize, that's an action, that's a verb. It goes from a noun, annuity, to a verb, annuitize. That simply means when you take a portion of your assets, give them to an insurance company, and in exchange, you will get a lifetime stream of guaranteed income for as long as you live, no matter how long you live, no matter how much you receive from that annuity. Now, there's some differences in some of the payouts we won't get into, but for the most part, the way I described it is how a life annuity works. Well, he's asking, if I'm younger than 59 and a half and I annuitize my IRA, I was told I do not have to pay the 10% early withdrawal penalty for taking money out of my IRA under 59 and a half. That is 100% correct. Because essentially, Chris, what he's doing is taking a series of equal periodic payments.
Right.
And that's
the topic if someone's researching more on this.
Yes. 72P. SEPP. SEP is a SEP. Is not a SEP.
Right.
A SEP. We got two P's in there instead of a SEP.
Right.
But series of equal periodic payments, 72T schedule is what they're known for by most people. And when you annuitize, you've essentially done that. So the government, the IRS, will waive that 10% early withdrawal penalty. That said, couple of things made me scratch my head also on this, Chris. He's talking about two different things. It would be the equivalent of, if this was a cooking show, someone calling up and saying, I'm thinking of putting an orange or an apple in my juice. Which do you prefer? Which should I use? Well, they're two totally different things. One's very acidic and high in sugar. The other is really good tasting. It's an apple. I like apples.
You prefer apples to oranges?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like oranges, too.
I prefer them mostly juiced, in the juice form.
Talking oranges or apples?
Oranges.
Oranges. Apples, I've been eating three apples a day lately.
I prefer apples in their
lately.
Whole form. Yeah. I prefer oranges in their juice form.
My tree, my apple tree, mm-hmm. just as
Gone
a little
crazy.
Side note, I donated 200 pounds of apples to the community juicing program they had mm-hmm. last month. And in return, I got 6 gallons of cider. So I've been like cidering out at night. And I still have a tote full of apples in my garage, and I've still given a ton away, and there's so many, my neighbor's going over today to pick the rest to give to her horses. The apple tree just went bonkers this year. I don't know why, but anyways, that's neither here nor there. So when he says he has a spear and a deer, I thought, these are two totally different things. One is the spear, single premium immediate annuity, is to begin paying income out immediately. A DIA stands for Deferred Income Annuity. It is essentially a SPIA with it deferred. You sometimes see SPDIA, Single Premium Deferred Income Annuity, but we just call them SPIAs and DIAs.
Which the chances of a DIA starting to pay out before he turns 59 and a half...
Slim to none.
Slim to none. Closer to none.
Now, a SPIA, for those folks who are keeping track, must begin paying out income within 13 months. Most DIAs, you will defer income for one or more years. More likely, decades, sometimes you defer the income. Now, buying a DIA, a deferred income annuity, inside an IRA is also not recommended. Contrary to popular belief, I knew I could do it. Contrary to that belief, you can own a DIA inside an IRA. So many advisors mm-hmm. say you can't own deferred income annuities inside an IRA. Au contraire, you can. The problem is you just have to turn the income benefit on by 70 and a half. So it defeats the whole purpose of a DIA. Now, if you have other IRAs handy, you can satisfy the RMD of that DIA perhaps, but it gets a little tricky because a DIA has been annuitized already. It gets really messy when you buy a DIA. Nowadays, you would use a QLAC, Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract, in place of a DIA inside your IRA, and you can defer that, listener, past age 70 and a half. You can go all the way to age 85.
Hang on. We need to take an 11-second break.
On today's show, we discuss QLACs, or Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, which are fixed insurance products. QLACs are offered by Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, but are not offered by Cambridge Investment Research, Incorporated.
You have to play that every time I say the word QLAC?
At some point. I've taken care of it, so we don't have to do it later. But yes, every show where that...
Thank you for that.
Item.
You just broke up. I was on a brilliant trail of thought here. But what I'm getting at, listener, what confuses me is how you're talking about, can I buy something that's going to pay me immediately, or what if I buy something that's going to pay me later? I don't quite know what you're doing, but a DIA is totally different than your SPIA. One thing I also want to point out to all our listeners, whenever you buy any of these types of income annuities, so when you hear Chris and I talk about income annuities, we're really talking about three types of annuities, SPIAs, DIAs, and QLACs, oh my. I always think of the Wizard of Oz, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my. But this is...
What? Is that from Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, isn't it? Lions, tigers, and bears? Don't tell me that ain't Wizard of Oz. That's Wizard of Oz.
For some reason, I'm... imagining something else, but you might be right. You keep talking, I'll figure it out.
Oh, God, now you're going to point out if I'm
wrong.
No. Lions, tigers, and bears, I think that's Wizard of Oz.
I think you're right, but go ahead.
Because aren't they skipping together down the yellow brick road?
Yeah, but I don't remember bears being in there.
Worried about lions, tigers, and
tigers.
Bears?
It's there's the lion, the cowardly lion.
But weren't they going to go through the woods and there was lions, tigers, and bears?
Yeah.
Or am I conflating a couple of nursery rhymes here?
Don't get too worried about it.
All right.
It's okay. You're probably right.
Thank you.
I'm not sure why it's... I'm having some brain fog today. So.
All right. Well, you can find out
I'll clear my mind,
Lions,
and then I'll
Tigers,
let you know.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, oh my.
Okay.
So, what I'm getting at, listener, is you have a lot... Well, you don't have a lot. You have the ability to do what you want to do and not to pay the penalty. That's the no-brainer. I don't quite understand what you're trying to accomplish, and we're trying to consider a spear or a deer come in, because you buy a spear if you need income immediately. We do that all the time for new retirees. They're retiring. They don't have enough pension and Social Security to cover their minimum dignity floor. So some clients will purchase an annuity for that. We will sometimes use a spear immediately for people in their 70s, even their 80s. They're getting old. Older, they don't like to manage their money anymore. They just want guarantees, simplicity, surety. So they will immediately want an income stream. You would buy a deer, on the other hand, when you know you're going to want income in the future, but you want to take care of that risk today. Rather than putting that money in the market and hoping it'll grow and be there in the future, you buy a contract today with a deer. The deer is when you say to the insurance company, what will I have to pay you today for you to guarantee me this tomorrow? It's kind of like Wimpy from Popeyes. I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. So in a deal, you are going to pay them, not on Tuesday. You're going to pay them today for a hamburger, not today, but on Tuesday. It's kind of like a Wimpy hamburger commercial.
It is Wizard of Oz.
It is Wizard of Oz. Yeah. So I am right.
Yeah, we're all good.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Mm-hmm. Spears and deers and culacs, oh my. Mm-hmm. We don't use deers much in this office. I haven't even recommended a deer in a very long time, ever since the advent of culacs. When culacs came out for a variety of reasons, we do like those. So anyways, we beat this horse to death. We can move on to the next question. But I think we answered it. I just don't know why he was asking.
There are, just to tie, kind of wrap this up, there are multiple ways to qualify for 72T substantially equal periodic payments to avoid the 10% withdrawal penalty.
Absolutely.
They're beyond the scope of this question. Annuitizing, like he's talking about, is one of the ways you can qualify. But there's at least two others. You just need to look into the rules behind that. If suddenly we've sparked your interest about how can I get money out prior to age 59 and a half and avoid the early withdrawal penalty with IRAs specifically.
That's a good point. Now, one thing I would say, since Chris brought it up, if anyone ever tries to do a 72T payment schedule, they are easy to break. They're worse than a Fabergé egg. You can break a 72T payment schedule very easy, and when you break it, you're nailed with penalties.
Yeah.
It is ugly. So what you do, and this is a trick from Ed Slott, let's say you have a big IRA with $1 million in. I'm just making that up. You got $1 million IRA. You're under the age of 59 and a half, and you want to start taking money out of that IRA. And you're going to be hit with a 10% penalty. Mm-hmm. Well, as Ed would say, if it's a one-time payment, screw it. Suck it up, take the 10% penalty, and stay away from a 72T payment schedule.
Yep.
But that said, if you're certain, no, I need $50,000 a year or $10,000 a year. I want to set up a 72T payment schedule. I definitely need that money. I'm definitely going to be taking it out. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. I just don't want to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Figure out how much money it's going to take to support that 72T payment schedule for the length of time, which has to be 5 years or 59 and a half, whatever is longer.
Yep.
So if you create a 72T payment schedule at 40, you got to essentially go to 59 and a half or 60. You got to go nearly 20 years, 19 and a half years if you want to be technical. But if you turn on a 72T payment schedule at 57, you have to go to 62. You got to go 5 years or 59 and a half, whatever is longer. So the point is, let's just say for the income benefit in my hypothetical $1 million example, Chris, meant he needs to, or the person needs to dedicate $500,000 of their IRA to do it. Mm-hmm. separate the IRA into two. Only turn the 72T payment schedule on in the IRA you need to take the 72T payment schedule from. The reason we recommend that is if you do break that Fabergé egg, and it's very easy over a 19 and a half year time period to blow it and make a mistake, you will greatly appreciate having that 72T payment schedule over here all by itself.
Right, not mixed in.
Because of the penalties that will be assessed when you break a 72T payment schedule. Okay, next question. Mm-hmm. Right up your alley.
Uh-oh.
Social Security.
Okay.
Ready?
I just hope I know the answer.
I am divorced. Not me, the listener. I wonder if we... I don't think we answered this one yet. It's from a state we've recently answered a question from.
Georgia again?
No, North Carolina.
Okay.
Did we do a North Carolina one recently?
I believe so.
If this question sounds familiar, just interrupt me.
Okay.
I am divorced. I was married to my ex for 12 years. I have not remarried, and I am currently 63 and a half. My ex passed away in 2005. I would like to retire at the end of 2018 and begin taking his Social Security benefits.
Is she still working?
Until I reach my full retirement age, she didn't say.
Okay, then we haven't answered this one. The one we answered was similar to this, but she was working.
Okay.
Talking about delaying her own, but collecting the survivor benefit, but it was going to eat up all of it.
My gut tells me, because of the way she worded this, Chris, I would like to retire the end of this year.
Got it.
Okay. 2018. Mm-hmm. So that tells me, yes, she's working.
Yep.
But no.
She's going to stop.
By the end of this year.
Got it.
Okay. Can I keep going?
Yes.
I would like to retire the end of this year, 2018, and take his Social Security benefits until I reach my full retirement age at 66 and 2 months. Or, if possible, delay until age 70
ding, 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 ding.
And then switch to my benefits. Can I do this? Is this scenario the best use of my benefits, or am I leaving anything off the table?
She's barking up the right tree. It may very well be the best scenario. However, since she doesn't provide any specific dollar amounts, it's hard to say for sure. Not only would we want to look at the specific dollar amounts in question, but also look at her needs for reliable, secure income. So all of these, you know, the strategies of delaying and switching and all this kind of stuff kind of go out the window if you just flat out need the most you can get right now today. But she may very well benefit from collecting the survivor benefit until she turns 70, assuming that her own benefit will grow to an amount higher than that survivor benefit. She must be thinking along those lines because of what she said about possibly delaying. So before she jumps the gun and switches from the survivor benefit to her own benefit at her full retirement age, which she mentioned was 66 and 2 months, she should definitely take a look at the benefits of delaying her own and keeping that survivor benefit still coming in. This is one of those scenarios where she can essentially be paid to wait to claim her own benefit because she's got access to that survivor benefit from her ex, whom she was married to for over 10 years, divorced, which doesn't then disconnect her from that survivor benefit, unless she were to have remarried before the age of 60, which she says she's now 63 and is not remarried. So that is not, she hasn't disconnected herself from that original spouse. And unfortunately, they passed away earlier, so she has the right to receive that survivor benefit. So whether it's leaving money on the table or not, depending on the strategy, we would want to take a look at the specific numbers that are involved. How much is her benefit versus the survivor benefit? And is it enough? Is that survivor benefit enough for her through her age 70 when she can then switch to her own benefit, which will then be maximized, will be the largest it could be at that point, and hopefully substantially larger than the survivor benefit. So I think she's going the right direction. I can't absolutely say, yes, you should do that without knowing the numbers. But likely that is an attractive way to go.
Okay. Sounds fair to me. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have another question. We'll do this one. Non-Social Security. We're going to go Social Security, non-Social Security. Social Security, non-Social Security.
That'll mix it up a little.
Mix it up a little because we got a lot of Social Security. We still have a ton of Social Security questions. We don't have many non-Social Security questions, so I'm burning through them. Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to think which one I want to do.
How about from not Georgia nor North Carolina? Because we've done a bunch from there. People are going to start to think we only answer questions from those two states.
Apparently we have a strong following in Georgia and North Carolina. This one is a stateless one, so we'll go with this one. My accountant told me I could keep contributing to my previous employer's HSA family plan after I left my company and switched to a health plan that is not a high-deductible health plan. Since my husband has signed up for a high-deductible health plan with our son, and it is a family plan, and we file a joint tax return, he said it didn't matter who actually holds the HSA, and that my husband didn't need to open his own HSA, and we could continue to contribute to the one in my name. Is this correct? Yes, and I need a little more information, but let me explain what they could be talking about here. She must still be covered. She has to be an active participant in a high-deductible health care plan. She says her husband and son is, but she never said she is. And that's my only caveat on this. If for some reason you are not covered by your husband's high-deductible health care plan, it is my understanding, and I could be wrong because Chris and I are not HSA. And for those who don't know, HSA stands for Health Savings Accounts. We are not HSA experts by any stretch. Ed is starting to add these to his courses that he has people, or we in the plan, his program rather, study. In fact, I will be studying in the Ed Slot program this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I'll be in San Diego studying with Ed Slot. So it is possible he will go over HSAs again. He's adding more and more. But I know definitively, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you must be a participant in a high-deductible health care plan. That's what determines HSA contribution abilities. Not a job, not salary, but a participant in a high-deductible health care plan.
Right.
She said she got out of hers. She said her husband and son have one. She didn't say she did. Let's assume she does.
Yeah, if she does, there's no requirement that there be multiple HSAs open, say, for all the participants in the family.
No.
The family then qualifies to contribute.
And the IRS lets you choose. Mm-hmm. You can put the money in one HSA account
or split
it between two. Now, my other, not concern, but thing that made me go, goodness, I keep coughing. She said she would like to contribute or continue contributing to her employer's HSA. They may not allow it. Now, if the employer's HSA was set up on her own and it's she did it and her employer was just directing money into it and it's still yours, but if it's an employer HSA, they may not allow you because you don't work there anymore to put money into it. So you may want to find out from them if it's possible to even make a contribution to it even though you don't work there. Unless you went out, unless your employer said, hey, you go out, you open the HSA, and we're going to direct money into it for you.
Well, the resolution, if that is the case, if she's blocked from that, now that she doesn't work there anymore, she could roll that into an HSA that she opened up personally, say at her local bank or wherever she wanted, and then she would have the ability to continue that one. It just wouldn't technically be, air quote, at her ex-employer. So there is a remedy if she finds that she is prevented due to rules of the HSA at the employer. The law will allow it as long as she is covered under a high deductible health insurance
plan. Absolutely. And in fact, if you are in an individual and you have your whole family, husband, wife, child, in an HSA, you don't have to open an HSA for the kid, an HSA for you, an HSA for the missus. You can just put the family contribution limit in one HSA.
Right.
Again, my concern is I don't know if the employer's HSA would allow her now that she doesn't work there. But I also want to make sure she is covered. If not, it's just the husband and child that are covered, not her.
Right.
And when I say covered, I mean covered by the high deductible health care plan to put the contribution limit in.
Now, we're not HSA experts, so I'm just thinking out loud. Let's say she has no health insurance coverage for whatever reason. So she didn't mention it. We are assuming she does, but what if she doesn't? If it's just the husband and the child, can they still put the, if they open their own HSA, could they put the family maximum
That's
in
a
there
good question.
With a single person and a child? Does that count as family? Or does it have to be a couple with a child?
That's a good question. I don't know what constitutes family plan under HSA rules.
I suspect that you could still put the same in, though. They couldn't put it in hers because
every
she's
time
not a
I heard it, but. It's always been in the vernacular of husband wife. So I don't know. I that's a good question.
That
I don't
is a good
know.
Question. So I guess now we're back to a Social Security question, assuming Jim isn't going to
cough up
collapse.
A lung here. Yeah. All of a sudden, my voice is gone. Okay, we'll go back to Social
this
Security.
This hasn't happened for a while since you stopped drinking your latte things. Oh, did you? Oh, that's why. You always start coughing when you drink a dairy related.
You really think
because
I'm
related.
Drinking a latte?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, you don't cough before, and then you start coughing after. Maybe your throat is lactose intolerant or something. I don't know.
You may not be able to answer this because he's throwing numbers out left and right here.
Well, I can answer it probably generally.
But this is a Arizonian's question.
Oh, moving out west.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You sure it's meant for us? Good afternoon, gentlemen. I ran across your website today. Very nice. I have a question, and I'm hoping you may be able to help. I will be 66 next July. I want to begin collecting Social Security in January. I believe that I can begin receiving payments in January.
Yes. Be claiming early because you'll be before your
Goodness,
full retirement
sorry.
Age.
I believe I can begin receiving payments.
Are you having technical difficulties now? Oh, jeez.
Well, I turned the mic and it shut it off, and then I could turn the damn thing back on. Don't make me laugh. I'm trying to talk,
all
and for some
serious.
Reason I can't talk.
Well, I can. How about if I read it? And
okay.
You can just sit there quietly. I want to begin collecting Social Security in January if possible. I believe that I can begin receiving benefits in January minus roughly 3.3% per Social Security Administration formula. That's true. Then beginning in July, it will ramp up to the full amount, plus the Social Security Administration will add back the total amount deducted between January and June into my monthly benefit over the next 15 years or so. I've emailed Social Security to no avail, and I am looking for some expert help with my question. We all wish that Social Security worked like that, because if you were following there closely, there was absolutely no penalty ultimately for claiming early. What he was describing is receiving about 3.3% less by claiming in January versus July, because he'd be claiming prior to his full retirement age. But then he says he thought that it would increase to the full amount so that he was no longer penalized at his full retirement age, plus all the amount they withheld. That 3.3% reduction from January to July would be added back into his benefits spread out over about 15 years. So by the time he reaches, say, 81 or 82, he will have gotten all that money back. bottom line, he never would receive any penalty for having claimed early. That's not how it works. What he's combining there is the effects of claiming early, which he's correct, that 3.3% reduction, but that is permanent forever and ever till you pass away. That benefit reduction is permanent if you claim prior to your full retirement age. What he's then combining is how they treat a reduction of benefits due to the earnings test, which is a withholding of benefits if you exceed certain earnings limits prior to your full retirement age and while you're collecting Social Security at the same time. Any of those benefits you lose, not because of an early claiming reduction, which is what he's talking about, but instead of a benefit reduction because of a violation of the earnings test, they will then recalculate your benefits at your full retirement age, effectively then giving you back the amount that was withheld sprinkled over approximately 15 years. Essentially, they recalculate your benefits as if you had claimed later than you really did because of violations in the earnings test withholding some of your benefits. It's a little hard to explain, so I'm not going to diverge onto that tangent, but he's combining those two things. Unfortunately, they're not connected. There's two different things that reduce your benefits. One, claiming early, and that effect is permanent. You don't ever get that back. Two, if you claim early and are affected by the earnings test, then the reduction due to the earnings test will be made up to you, spread out over about 15 to 17 years when they recalculate your benefits. So he's combining the two. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. If you claim in January, it's going to be permanent. Your benefits from that day forward will always be about 3.3% less than they would have been if you'd waited till July to claim. So there you go.
Sounds good.
See, there was no coughing while you weren't talking.
No, as soon as I start talking, I'll start coughing. It's always going to happen. Okay. How much time do we have left?
One more good question.
One more good
probably.
One.
Probably, yeah.
All right, let's do this one. I'm going to jump him to the top of the stack of stuff here because it's a non-Social Security question. Mm-hmm. Remember what we said, non-Social Security questions get to jump to the top of the stack. Okay, hello, Jim. So he knows how to write these emails. I'm looking to clarify if my understanding of the... You're looking at me with a condescending look.
No.
Is it because he began hello, Jim, and not hello, Jim and Chris?
No, I'm not harmed. I'm not hurt by that at all.
No? You sure?
Mostly sure.
Let me start over then.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Jim. James, Jimmy, the Jimster, the Jimanian devil. I'm looking to clarify if my understanding of the rule of 55 for 401ks is correct. Mm. I will turn 55 July of 2019.
Excellent.
I think that if I separate from service in the year that I turn 55, which could be as early as January 1st of 2019, mm-hmm. I can take penalty-free withdrawals from my current employer's 401k. I would have to keep the money in that 401k, and I would not be able to roll it over to an IRA as the rule of 55 does not apply to IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I do believe the rule of 55 does not require periodic substantially equal payments. So the other reason I wanted to mention this, because we had just talked about those.
Another mention of SEPPs.
Yes, SEPs. Of course, I would still need to pay taxes on such distributions.
Of course.
But I would not be subject to the additional 10% penalty. Mm-hmm. So then he goes on to actually give the wording from the IRC tax code.
Oh, we don't need that.
We don't need all that.
Because he actually has a very good understanding of how this works.
So I'll just get to his summary at the end. Could you please let me know if my understanding is accurate? Or correct my understanding if it's not accurate, noting any potential concerns that I may have overlooked. Thank you for your time and assistance. Do you want to help him with that?
His understanding is accurate. I don't have in this particular narrow regard for his retirement planning. We're not judging whether it's a good idea for him to take it out or not. That's up to him. But as far as qualifying for penalty-free withdrawals, as long as he makes it, he doesn't separate from service until at least January, and he can do it anytime thereafter. It doesn't have to be in the year you turn 55. It could be in the year you turn 55 or the next year when you turn 56 or 57 or 58, etc. Prior to the age of 59 and a half, it grants you a golden ticket to be able to access monies in that 401k alone without the early withdrawal penalty.
And it can be actually as young as age 50 if you are a qualified public safety employee.
Oh, that's true. There is that extra little bonus for those folks.
And he mentions that in his email that I didn't read. But I wanted to say the same thing to this particular gentleman. He is spot on. His understanding is correct, and if he retires after January 1st of this coming year, he'll be set.
Yeah. Not many people know about that, actually. A lot of people.
Because it's in or after the year you turn 55. You do not have to be 55. So he will actually retire at 54 and still be able to take penalty-free withdrawals from his employer's 401k.
And he doesn't have to set up effectively the 72T type payments that we were talking about none before. That has nothing to do with it. You can take out as little or as much as you want during that period. Just as if, I mean, you get to treat that 401k as if you were 59 and a half.
Now, one caveat, your employer's plan can and often does put restrictions on how often you can request withdrawals when you retire, especially when you retire early, so to speak. So we see that all the time. I've seen 401ks that limit withdrawals to one a year. I've seen a 401k for a national energy company that has workers here in Colorado. One came in to see me. $40, Chris, per distribution.
Right. Yeah. So there's a discouragement from doing weekly distributions.
Right. So you're certainly not going to set it up for that because you're going to be paying a $40 penalty. Or $40 fee every distribution. So you do want to connect with your employer, listener, and find out, or at least connect with the custodian of the 401k, and find out, are they going to place any restrictions? So if you do retire early, can you call them up and take $1,000 out whenever you need it? Do they limit you to one a month, one a quarter, one a year, whenever you call? Find that out, because that could probably be the only restriction on this. But the government certainly isn't going to impose a 10% penalty. You are exempt from it.
Perfect.
Okay. Anything else?
If you have another short one, we could do another one if you want to knock one more out. But
sure,
as
we're
long
on
as
a
it's
roll.
Not too long, yeah.
An absolute roll. So we'll go to a Social Security one again, since we got a ton of Social Security ones. Okay. Goodness, where are we?
Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yes, I know.
It's a lovely day in Fort Collins today, by the way.
I'm looking to see which one you said you wanted a short one. There was a good one I was just reading. I don't know where the hell it went.
Well, it's okay. Especially since you're having health issues.
I know. I'm dying over here. This is not the way to do. You can tell we only record once and that's it. So we're good to go or not. Ah, here it is. Okay. This actually came in to Laura, and she forwarded it to us.
Okay.
So unique. I don't know how Laura ended up with it. Okay. Hello, Laura and Jim. So, no Chris, just Jim and
None
Laura.
At all.
Nope.
Just Laura and Jim.
Yep.
That's excellent.
Poor Chris.
It's all good.
I mean, it's not like you've only been doing the podcast for 5 years now since we've been on iTunes. I mean, Laura, we've talked about her on the show at least three or four times.
Yeah. I don't know. It's all good.
So, hello, Jim and Laura. I have a question for your podcast. Here is the situation. I'm a divorced working man who was married for 15 years, and I have not remarried. My former wife has not remarried either. In about a year, I will turn 66 and reach my full retirement age for Social Security. I am self-employed and can't plan to keep working until 70. The Social Security estimates that I would get a monthly benefit of $2,250 at 66, $3,000 if I wait to 70.
Social Security estimates my former wife's PIA to be $2,800. And that's important, oh, wow. PIA.
She's a strong earner.
She
that's
is.
Pretty much the top.
Pretty much. Can I, at age 66, claim a spousal benefit of $1,400, half of my wife's PIA, and then at 70, drop the spousal and begin claiming my $3,000? Because she's going to get a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
If I can, it seems like a no-brainer. Am I missing something?
How old is the ex-wife? Does it say? Because that's the only...
He sent another email.
Ah, okay.
One detail I omitted.
Mm-hmm.
My former wife is age 62.
Oh, excellent. Okay. It sounds like he has a very strong situation with his Social Security. The force is strong with this one.
Because he's been grandfathered.
Because he's been grandfathered in. He's been grandfathered into one key factor that allows him to pursue the strategy he's describing, and that is, as long as you're age 62, as of January 1st of 2016, you're able to file what's called a restricted application at or after your full retirement age. So he says he turns his full retirement age next year. He'll be 66 in 2019, which means back in 2016, he was 63. At least he was 62, turning 63. So he's one of the last grandfathered into this. And what the restricted application allows you to do is when you have your own earned benefit but would like to avoid claiming it for benefits of the delayed retirement credits, which he's talking about, turning his $2,250 primary insurance amount into $3,000 per month at age 70, he can collect only a spousal benefit by filing this restricted application, restricting his claim to only the spousal benefit, which in his case is going to be half of that PIA amount of his ex-wife of $2,800, so half of that's $1,400. He can collect $1,400 a month for those 4 years between 66 and 70 and then switch to $3,000 a month when he turns age 70. Now, if they were still married, two things would have to be true. The wife would have to be 62 and claiming her own benefit. Because they're divorced, the second half of that restriction is forgiven. The first half is still true. She must be at least 62, which he confirmed in the follow-up email. She is. So she just has to have the potential or be eligible to claim her benefit. She doesn't have to have actually claimed it, which is different than if they were still married. If they were still married, she would have to have actually still started claiming her benefit to unlock the door to her spousal benefit. But because they're divorced, there's a special rule that as long as you've been divorced at least 2 years, they don't require the ex-spouse to have claimed in order to unlock the spousal benefit. So I believe through this whole story, that's clearly the case. They've been divorced more than 2 years. So as long as she turns 62 before he goes in to claim this restricted benefit of the spousal only, it all works. So he also seems to have a pretty good understanding of how this works and actually has one of the strongest Social Security claiming combinations that are still left out there, claiming a substantial spousal benefit, $1,400. Believe it or not, the full retirement benefit for the average worker isn't much higher than $1,400. So he's collecting that because her earnings record is so strong, towards the top of the possible Social Security benefits out there. And then because he was 62, by January 1st of 2016, he gets grandfathered in. If he was a little bit older, he wouldn't be able to do this. He'd be faced with just two choices, claim his or claim his and a spousal offset, which wouldn't count. So he essentially would get no benefit from the spousal benefit if he couldn't do this restricted application because his benefit is so substantial. So
one thing I want to add in case you didn't, because I was too busy coughing out a lung over there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mention where he said, I'm self-employed, I intend to work to age 70, but the earnings test is not going to apply here?
I didn't mention that because of that, but if someone was listening and were like, wait a minute, the earnings test.
Why don't you take care of that?
Because he reaches his full retirement age before he starts this strategy, that's irrelevant. You can earn as much as you want after you reach the month of your full retirement age. The earnings test is no longer relevant. The only thing really that kicks in which affects a lot of people, is if you have other income other than just the Social Security, if his only income was the Social Security, he'd pay no income tax on it. If he's earning money in addition to that via work, self-employed, or other types of income sources, he'll get kicked up into those higher tiers where half or 85% of that Social Security benefit will become taxable. So if you're looking for a quote-unquote penalty for still working after your full retirement age, the only real penalty comes in the form of possibly increased taxation of your Social Security because of your overall earnings or income situation. But earnings test, not relevant here, so don't have to worry about that part.
Okay. That is six email questions we got
through on this show.
That's a record. That's a record.
If it's not a record.
But we want to thank our dedicated listeners for dealing with my all of a sudden coughing, hacking voice. Don't know what's going on. But we also want to thank you and encourage you. If you have any questions, send them to us. We will answer them. You can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Click on the Contact Us button and send us your question that way. Or send it directly to Jim at JimHelps.com. That's Jim at Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Be as specific as you can in your email. The less specificity we can have in our answer. So if you add a lot of good details in your email question, we'll be able to answer your question. And then finally, for those who don't know, most people who listen to us on a regular basis know, but for those who don't know, Chris and I are living, breathing, practicing financial planners here in the state of Colorado, but we work with people throughout the United States. We have a unique business model. We do not need you to invest with us or do anything like that. We simply provide sound retirement planning advice. So if you have any questions on your retirement planning and you like what we call a coffee and a second opinion, that's our complimentary phone call where you have a chance to share with me a little bit about what your concerns are. I'll share with you a little bit about the ways we may be able to help you, or maybe we can't help you, and I'll be upfront and honest and tell you that as well. But the coffee and a second opinion call is a great way to get all those questions ironed out. And to do that, you can also go to our website, Jim Helps, Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Instead of clicking on the Contact Us button, click on the Schedule an Appointment button. It's right there on the homepage. And you can schedule your own coffee and a second opinion phone call. No matter where you live in the United States.
As long as you have a way to call.
And if you're from Kentucky, I really would encourage you to schedule.
He'll give you extra time so you can answer all of his questions about the retirement situation in the grand state of Kentucky.
Especially if you live from Lexington north towards Cincinnati. Kind of narrowed it down.
So you're not going to specify a county and a...
No county.
Maybe a street.
A big area. But Lexington north towards Cincinnati and the Ohio River. That little protrusion, that northern protrusion of Kentucky is where I'm kind of narrowing my search down.
Excellent. Well, if you can help Jim out, schedule a coffee and a second opinion. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.